Because if we want the Superman to come faster, you should help me. Because chimpanzee was not a conscious person. You know, just a living being. But we are conscious people. We have been given mind and heart and souls and everything. Nature is asking our help. That if you collaborate with me, we can bring down the new species faster. And why do we bring down the new species faster or the new consciousness faster? Because it will help us to survive, to have happiness, to have greater wealth, to have almost an assurance of our continuity. This is again a wonderful principle in Sri Aurobindo, that anything that you want to salvage, you want to save, it must be done from a higher consciousness. Say, for example, somebody is drowning in the quicksand. You know what a quicksand is, isn't it? So how do you help him? If you also jump into that and pull him out, you will also drown. You cannot go below and push him, there's no chance. So what you do is give him a stick from above, or if he's close by, give you a hand, and then pull him up from above. So he says, staying on the mental level, we cannot help man. Man who is drowning in the quicksand of mind, mind's problems. If you want to help man really, from above, pull him up. And this above pulling up is the supramental consciousness which can pull up mankind out of its problems, out of its sorrow, out of its disease, out of its ailments. And whereas till now all religions, morality, ethics, everything has been on the mental level. Well, religions have had an upshot with the heaven, no doubt about it. But no religion has come down to help. All the saints have gone up into heaven, gone up. All the sannyasins realize the Brahman out there. Nobody said, I'll come back to save earth. Except perhaps Christ said, Buddha said, Sri Ramakrishna said, Vivekananda said, and Sri Aurobindo said. There are a handful of people, maybe I don't know some names. It's only a handful of sages and saints and vibhutis who said, I'll come back to save earth. But they have come back on their individual capacity. So they are trying, Buddha is helping somebody, Christ is coming to the visions of people, is trying to salvage some people. But mankind on the whole is left like that. So Sri Aurobindo says that I want to bring the higher force down which can pull up humanity. That is the logic of bringing the Superman. It is not that he had a fancy that I am a great yogi, I want to really bring down something new to the earth consciousness. So he said, earth consciousness, being a super yogi you can be, but it doesn't help. It could have helped had it been only you person, 3%, 10%, 30%, 300%. But Sri Aurobindo is not one looking for a few numbers. He is saying mankind is suffering and will suffer because he foresees the amount of suffering we are going to go through. So he said, let us hasten bringing this new force. And he brought that, and now he's saying, oh mankind, some of you at least come up. Receive the force. Put it in your hearts and minds and bodies so that there could be a direct link. And these few, what he called the pioneers of the new adventure, he's giving a call to all of us. He doesn't want all the races, everybody, every human being on earth to be a spiritual man, no. He says, if there are a pioneering group that can attract and attach, that, he says, will save man. So it is not that every person is a doctor. In this colony there is only one doctor, but who treats all of us. So similarly, if there are a few pioneers in this part of this world with a new consciousness, that light will percolate into all parts of Holland and they will help and the mankind, the general man in Holland to come up. So it is in finding those pioneers that is the role of this thing. integral yoga. I mean, you have started the school, I'm trying to give you the broad base of where we stand and why we stand. What is the raison d'etre of this integral yoga? Otherwise, you may think it is one more yoga, one more fancy, somebody called Nell has started, let's go on. Don't think, it has a wide perspective. It has a cosmic angle to it. It has a tremendous future purpose to it. We in our little understanding may not know the cosmicity. What we are doing in a small group of 20 or 30 has its tremendous influence on this whole of earth itself. So that is why when we come to this yoga, we come not for ourselves. We come with a great burden on our shoulders that we are here for humanity. It may be, we may be very incapable, which we are. No doubt about it, we are not Mother Sri Aurobindo to take the world's load upon us. But definitely this much you remember, that do not come to this path if you say, no, I'll be very happy in my little corner, do my meditations, do my japa, put my incense stick and have a lovely music. Let me live for myself. You can do that. Mother used to tell us in our, when we were children, you see, I went through the education at the ashram, which is called the pre-progress system. That means, if we could choose our teachers, we could choose our subjects, choose the number of hours we want. Everything was free choice of the student. Say for English, there are these four teachers. I will say, can you teach me English? Someone will come to you, someone will come to you. So you say, which standard? I say, I don't know, but I want to do this book. So it's an internal, personal relation between teacher and student. So there's a complete choice. Mother told us one thing, that you take all the time to choose. You want geography, you want to do history, the choice is yours. But once you choose, you have no right to drop it. You have to go to the end of it. I mean, it may take you time, but the choice given is yours. So similarly in yoga too, do not step into integral yoga as a personal adventure. That is why our progress may not be very fast. Because the moment you come into the zone of integral yoga, you have an internet connection with the entire humanity. Your email is not just nell@.com. Your internet address is open to everybody. So this is the significance of integral yoga. So that is why to be the children of Mother Sri Aurobindo is a great responsibility. It's not to be taken lightly. And at the same time, you can feel light. Don't feel burdened. So I'm the person carrying the cross. Nobody's carrying the cross. Only one person did that on behalf of all of us. So we also can feel light if we keep the Mother and Sri Aurobindo in our hearts. They will carry the burden. And this is one thing I really recollected when I came to these international airports. You know, you have these conveyor belts in the airports, you know, you put your luggage there and you walk. Some people carried the luggage on their back. So I felt how stupid it is. That the conveyor is carrying me and I'm carrying the bag on my back. Put that bag also on the conveyor, it will carry both of us. But our sense of insecurity, our ignorance, I carry my own load on my back. And this is precisely what surrender is. If you are already on the conveyor belt, put the things on. Then the mother will take your burden and the burden of your problems and everything. And you know, when you stand on the conveyor belt, you know, after 500 meters, you reach the end. So what is the worry? So this is the confidence with which you go. Once you have stepped on integral yoga, you have stepped on the integral conveyor belt. Then you can feel relieved. But until the conveyor belt, you have to walk. You have to go up and down, and you know, all airports are not so easy. But if you have reached the conveyor belt, the belt of the mother's love and consciousness, unburden yourself. She will take you to the destiny. And that is one thing. Which destiny? Don't mentalize. Don't be ambitious. Because in the beginning, in the ashram, people said, oh, I want to be supramental. It's like going to a supermarket and say, I want a big piece of money.
What does it cost? Yeah.
So mother said, why do you want to be supramental? There is a new idea, a new fashion, you know, something beyond man. Said, why do you want to be? Be a man first, then you'll be a superman. So let us not keep any destiny in front, because that is again a mental visualization. Let us say, I am on the conveyor belt and trust the belt that it will take you. Wherever you are meant to go. Because remember, all of us are not meant to be Superman at all. Because your psychic being, your soul and your Atman and your psychic being may have come for a specific purpose, specific experience. So let us not put an ambition of a Superman. Let us have the ambition to be her children. And Sri Ramakrishna gives a wonderful example, you must have heard. He says, be like a kitten and not like a monkey baby. A wonderful example. I mean, it is an extraordinary thing. But integral yoga, we would say we combine both, the baby monkey and the kitten. First you have got to be the baby monkey, I am afraid. That is what is the first step. Right from the beginning, you cannot be kittens. Because that's where the question of the personal effort comes. I'll deal with that next. In the beginning, we have to make an effort. We have the trust, the faith. But Mother herself wrote to me, without the personal effort, you cannot do anything. So in the beginning, all of us have to do that monkey, baby monkey business. Holding, clinging to the mother. The clinging must be there. It's only in the second part of our yoga, when our surrender is more and more complete, that we become the kittens. First part, I'm afraid we have to do our work. Of course, the push, the inspiration, the sustenance is there. But she would never say, be passive, tamasic. People saying, oh no, mother will take care. That is also there in the ashram, I'm telling all real estate. Even in Auroville, you'll see the same attitude. Oh, la mère, elle est là. Elle est là, but she's not going to do everything. She'll take the horse to the water, but drinking is your business. So there are some conditions. So let's not think this all is a rosy path. But yes, one thing is, if you are deeply touched, if you centrally feel the need to really, as Sri Aurobindo describes, you must feel somewhere, no, the mother described that thing, somewhere the unease. Unease in the sense, I have everything in the world, all the material comforts are there, all my relations are good, my children are sort of well settled. But something is missing. So you're not happy with yourself, yourself in the happiness sense, not the material happiness. But you must feel some vacuum. And that feeling of that vacuum is the beginning of aspiration. Until then, as we have seen the ordinary life, you may be there. Well, feeling the vacuum, I'll tell you before we stop for a while. Mother once, I was sitting with the mother. And I don't remember now, it's too long back, almost 67. When mother started explaining to me the life of reality and the life of appearance. I forgot to note it down, some things I noted down, but she started describing the life of an ordinary person, I mean, a person in the worldly person, as we say. She said, what happens is like this. A person is born in a family. He grows up, is a child, goes to school, becomes an adult. Then, of course, in the course of time, he gets married, he has children, he has settled his job. And then he makes his wealth, his name, his fame, whatever, you know, the general process. And then, when he retires, in India we have age 60 for retirement, if it's a government job. She said, then the man says, well, I've got all the time now, I go towards God. Because I've done my duties, I married off my two daughters, my son, I've sent him to America, he's well settled. Now I have all the time to go to, you know, God, to temples, to churches, to pilgrimages. Then the mother says, but at that time when he goes to God, what has he got to give to God? What does he have? He may have a good bank balance, but even that he has written to his grandchildren, he won't give it to God. And what has he got in his mind? It's full of problems, complexities, a mind that is worked for 60 years or 40 years. He's become a routine man of habits. He's not open to new ideas, not open to new consciousness. The heart, well, you know, all the emotions of the family are fully there, your grandchildren, your children, your daughters, your friends. There's no place for the divine at all. And your body, of course, you know, is half a dozen diseases are there. So what do you have to give to God when you have at that age? Nothing. I mean, you are almost kind of empty. So she said, but you know, oh, I still remember her voice. She says, all this she told me in French, of course. Sometimes the soul peeps out and says, voilà, je suis. The soul comes out and peeps out and says, hey, here I am, here am I. But we say, no, wait till 60 years, then I'll take care of you. That peeping of the soul, we don't listen. We have no time. We have seen all our life, we have done that. But the soul does peep out, she says, with everybody, it's not X, Y, Z. Everybody. She says, hey, look at me, I need your care, I need your attention. You sit down for a little meditation, look at me, converse with me, talk to me, come in with me. But we have no time. So, she concluded saying, some of the explanations I'm giving, she did not say all this. But this she said, so spirituality must begin when one is young. Do not think it's a thing of the future and a future age. Because when I'm young, I have everything full. Nature, whatever it is granted, my mind, my heart, my body, my vital, my emotion, it's all in its fullest capacity. So I can jump into spiritual life with the full vigor, with full aspiration, with full work, with full devotion. Because everything is full and is ready to receive. Over the years, what happens? Everything gets into a kind of a dogmatism. I begin to think what I have said is right, what I think is right, what my religion is right. But it's too far, too late. So she told me at that time, that you must start when one is young. Well, this is why, I don't know, I was carried away by what I was going to tell you. This is, I think, what we mean by this integral yoga. I mean, we have got to be, and of course she told me at that time that you have got to start when one is young. And there was a central decision, yes, I will take to this life. But that doesn't mean you really start the life next morning. But at the same time, if you take a central decision, what Maharaj Sri Aurobindo often tells us is, as I started off saying, decides centrally. Centrally means in your heart of hearts, in your soul, in your inner being, where you feel that you are that true being. You say, no, I think I really want to do a higher life. I mean, okay, all this is fine, but still there must be that thing. If that feeling is strong, then she says, it does happen, because, you know, 1965, 66 maybe, I was told that. But it doesn't mean I become a spiritual master. It takes time for this central decision to flower out. And when the mother says something also, she kind of puts a seed into your being, which takes time to flower out. So spirituality, a spiritual mode of life, pattern of life, we can lead, but the decision we must take when you are like that, a young man, then perhaps, you know, you get into a kind of what she said, you know, you get into marriage, you get into children. But some way the seed is cracking up your being, remember, the seed on the ground, it takes time and slowly cracks up the ground beside it, and one day suddenly the green leaves come. So the decision when you are young, if you take that, even if you kind of forget in the world's ways, but something is always cracking up. And a time will come, the cracking will be so loud, you cannot anymore stand it. Then you say, no, that's enough for me. But this decision, if it is not there, then it will take a long time. Then if it do not take, but at a later age, if you want to really take a decision, I would say, it's harder, it's not impossible. But one has to keep to it, remind oneself every day, every day, every day. But it can be done. So this is where I would say, let us start. Wherever we are, whatever age, whatever capacity, the yoga must begin. Well, I think I'll come to the technicalities of it after eating the cake. If I remember it right. Yeah, we'll take a short break. It's about 4:15 now, we'll come back at 4:30.
Now we see the place of integral yoga, its necessity as an evolutionary principle itself. And the last word, what we talked about just now, before closing, is when the mother said, you must start early. And when we explained that we must take the central decision. If I can further give you a clearer word for that, the central decision is this. We begin to make a God center or ego centeredness to God center. Spirituality is nothing but basically this. That if all of our movements and existence, if this becomes the center of our life, then I think we are well on the journey. Then we don't have to even think of what is to be done, what is not to be done, etc. But remember that this is the basic change in axis. That is why when he says all life is yoga, it can be yoga if the axis is changed to God-centeredness. Now what do we understand by this God-centeredness and its axis? I'll just come to that. Before that, if we take up other yogas also, you may say they are all God-centered. Then why do we talk about integral yoga being God-centered? For example, take Hatha Yoga, the other one Raja Yoga.
Hatha Yoga, we have said, is starting, you know, Indian philosophy, there is this marvelous thing that every school of philosophy had only one aim, that is to bring moksha or liberation. Moksha, or what we say the word, other word, maybe you know this word, mukti. Every school of philosophy, we don't have any kind of, you know, schools of philosophy just for the sake of academic philosophy. Kant said this, Hegel said this. It is not Kant and Hegel and these people saying. We are not interested in what they say. We are interested in what they say if it leads me to God, or if it leads me to mukti. So that is the orientation of Indian philosophy, for which we even call the word darshana. We don't have the word philosophy. Philosophy is a mental exercise. Very great. Maybe Kant is brilliant. But can you practice Kant and lead to God? You may become a good ethical man and duty is for duty's sake and all that stuff. It's good for a general society. But I am wanting this. So Indian schools of thought, they started taking up this question of moksha and mukti. And they have been extremely psychological in their analysis. In fact, that is what there is a big struggle in India now. Why do you want to take up Western psychology? The psychology as a word has come from the West, no doubt. But yoga is practical psychology. When you want to do integral yoga, it is integral psychology. There is no difference in that. So, as a psychological analysis, some yogis started this Hatha Yoga based on the body. They said, let us see if we take the body, can we reach the mukti? So, they started all this asanas. But we said asanas is not just to give us a kind of quietness, it's good for meditation. But it has got something more. That it universalizes our energies. That means our body gets connected with the universal energies. From where you get this tremendous energies, you have all the faculties very well developed. And Sri Aurobindo himself did that for hours together when he was in Calcutta and Baroda. 6 to 8 hours he used to do this Hatha Yoga. And as a result, he started writing poetry, you know, hundreds of lines at a time. Prior to Hatha Yoga, he would say, I used to write 5, 7, 8, 10 lines per day. But now there's a flow of this poetry. So whatever your capacities are, they get enhanced by Hatha Yoga. But that is the limit. So Hatha Yoga had to practice something from the Raja Yoga called Pranayama. Pranayama, again you know, is the exercises with breathing. That is, not just exercises, is actually what we call prana is life. Life energies. They are there in this world, in this air. So each time you take breath, it is not just take breathing oxygen. There is some other element of the life energy that you are breathing. So these exercises, which are very simple, you know, which I can tell you, but they are not just exercises. They are breathing in a positive energy, you are spreading that energy into the different parts of your body and then releasing it out, as if taking away all the toxic effects, all the diseases, all the tensions out of your body, throwing it out. And this pranayama was combined with Hatha Yoga, because this pranayama is basically on the level of mind. So Hatha Yoga combined itself with Raja Yoga for its liberation.
And Raja Yoga again combined with Hatha Yoga for its liberation.
But Raja Yoga started something.
The ideal of Raja Yoga was Samadhi.
What is the highest of a Raja Yogi? Sir, I want to reach the Samadhi. Samadhi is trance. That you sit in meditation and after some hours you lose yourself in a state of consciousness which is called the trance, where you are not aware at all of this world. So yogis have lived there for days together. You can be without the body necessity of hunger and sleep and all that. One can live in that. In fact, Sri Ramakrishna was there for 3 days at a stretch. So one can do that. But that samadhi, it gives you some kind of a liberation from the day-to-day problem, the day-to-day existence, day-to-day life. That was a thing that was tried out by the mind. But then, you have the another marga, another yoga. You have all heard about this. Jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, and karma yoga. This is essentially about the, from the Gita. Gita has given us this triple yoga. This is Jnana Yoga, is the yoga of knowledge. You see, that is what Indian philosophy and yoga and spirituality always tried, is how to embrace the common man. You see, spirituality for the level of yogis, rishis is fine. But we are not interested only in making spiritual only those top people. We have to reach everybody on the way. It may be a poorest man or the richest man or the clumsiest fellow or the... doesn't matter. So that was the positive effort to bring down spirituality to the grassroots level and not to keep it elitistic. So what Sri Krishna gave us was, okay, man essentially is this, mind, knowledge, heart, emotion, that is bhakti, and karma is work. So all of us, we do work, some work or the other. So he said, let this be a yoga itself. You can do yoga just by working. But what do you mean by yoga in work, karma yoga? It is, remember the word yoga? Definition we said is, yoga is union. How do we have union through work? That is the question which the Gita solves. The Gita tells us, in whatever way you want to work, do your work. But, only remember 3 words. He says, remember me and offer. In fact, that has become the mantra of integral yoga also. You should take it. The center, the absolute motto of integral yoga is just this. Remember me and offer. So that's what Lord Krishna told Arjuna. That you are a warrior, it's your dharma to fight. And not to say like Arjuna had said, you know the word, the Mahabharata story, that I will not fight because they are my gurus are there, my uncles are there, my brothers are there. He said that is the basic mistake you are making, Arjuna. What is the basic mistake? First thing is, we think we are the doers. Doer means, I am the person who is doing things. That I am fighting. That I am the warrior. I am going to kill the Kauravas. I am going to conquer that. I am going to achieve this center. I am going to give lecture here. He said, that is the first mistake you are making. We are not the doers. We are only actors. Well, I know I have faced some questions before. It may be a bit strange for you to accept this kind of a new thought, because here we have been, here and everywhere, even in India when I go and speak, it is impossible to believe that I am not the actor. If I say I am sitting here and I am giving you a lecture on integral yoga, Sri Krishna would say it is wrong. You are not giving the lecture. For example, if you say I am seeing, the word is I am seeing. I say, how are you seeing? With your fingers? No, through my eyes. Or with my eyes. So now if I say, I am writing, if you ask me, how are you writing? Writing with a pen. So what is this pen? It is my instrument for writing. Pen is not writing. I am using the pen to write. Similarly, I am not seeing. The eyes are only instrumentation.